just for you on KPFT FM and FM HD.
This is 90.1 KPFT FM and FM HD1 Houston, with translators at 89.5 FM K208DG Galveston and 91.9 FM K220 KC Huntsville. Houston's community station, 90.1 KPFT, a Pacifica radio station.
Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch. And that tells us that it is 5 p.m. Thursday and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originated in Houston devoted to storytelling. We are aired only on Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1 FM here in Houston, or kpft.org on the internet. I am Mary Edgerton, tonight's host. And along with the best team on radio, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers whose stories take us on journeys through the windows of their souls, on fanciful trips, amid worlds of enchantment, on tragic events that they were witness to before returning us safely to the present. Folks, this is a fun drive period, and so I am going to reach out to you. Do you like hearing these stories? We always bring you safely back to the present. But where were you during the story? What feelings stay with you? Yes, that is the impact of the story, the telling, the fantasy, the chance for you to imagine in your head how this played out, what the characters looked like. Yes, your trip inside other people's lives. Well, if this hour brings you satisfaction, please keep it on the air. We are KPFT, Houston Community Radio, a Pacifica station. We do not air advertisements. We are a community station that is community supported. So please go to kpft.org, select donate, and when you do, please scroll through the radio shows and select So What's Your Story as the inspiration for your support. And when you do, we thank you. Tonight, though, is about so much more than our fun drive. This is February, that month that defies correct pronunciation. And what does February mean for us? Yes, there's Valentine's Day. But February excites me because it is Black History Month. This month was chosen to coincide with the birthdays of Abraham Lincoln, the U.S. president who issued the Emancipation Proclamation in 1863, and Frederick Douglass, an African-American orator, social reformer, writer, and abolitionist. I continue to be astonished as I learn and relearn the history of this country and its treatment of African-Americans. I consider myself a learner, ready to hear stories from my fellow Americans that transport me to the worlds that they have experienced and leave me with a better understanding of the Black experience in America. The next question that comes to mind is how to hear those stories. What storytelling format? Last month, Hank Rubicek hosted several writers and playwrights to transport you to the realm of the Holocaust. I am going to do something similar here. I am going to take you on a similar journey, but through the eyes of African-American performers. I have invited several African-American performers and writers to take you on their journeys, on trips that portray their lives' experiences so that you can be immersed in a new world before we return you to the present. I want to open with Kelly Kells. To my followers, you may have heard many of Kelly's stories on several of my shows in the past. He is a wonderful storyteller who connects with the human in each of us. Kelly has taken up a new format of storytelling, the monologue of the stand-up comedian. The open monologue for a comedian tells us about their fears, their vulnerabilities, and makes them human to us. We will hear his monologue, which is a tale of pandemic survival. Just something to know in advance. When we used to plan our storytelling shows in the before time, as in before the pandemic, I would host a brunch for my guests on the Sunday before our then live performances. Yes, the before time. And now, Kelly Kells.
Hello, hello. My name is Kelly Kells. Thank you for tuning in. And thank you, Dr. Mary, for having me on your show. And thank you for showcasing Black artists and creators. And you do it whether it's Black History Month or not. And I love you for it. So now that I got a few of my friends tuning in at home or in their car, I got a message for y'all and for everybody else. And that is, I'm looking for some new friends. Let me just get straight to it. I'm looking for some new friends. The old ones just aren't cutting it anymore. I do know that my true problem is not my friends. The problem is this here pandemic that we are in and all of the movies that I have been watching. Because friends in movies will make you feel like you ain't got no friends whatsoever, period. Not no real ones. Friends in movies are the best. In the movies, you can call your friends up in the middle of the night, panicking, and say one thing. Meet me at our spot immediately. And what do? They immediately hang up the phone and they immediately go to y'all's spot. Not my friends. Oh, no. My friends ask way too many questions. Questions like, well, where exactly is our spot? And it's exactly that I don't have time for anymore. I don't have the bandwidth. Seriously, at this point in our friendship, if you don't know where our spot is, like, are we even friends to begin with? So y'all see why I say, I need me some new friends. And this time around, I'm getting me some friends like friends in the movies. You know what I'm saying? Some friends that know where your spot is. This is just the kind of love that I need right now at this juncture in my life. Of all the storylines that I've come across, there's only been one accurate representation where I can say, ooh, like that felt a little too close to home. Like that felt like what it feels like to be me and having my friends. It was a commercial. It was a radio commercial, car insurance commercial. Maybe you heard it. And the guy, he calls his friend up. And I feel like I was this guy once upon a time. So I know exactly how he feels. He's panicking. He calls his friend in the middle of the night. He says, hey, can you come and pick me up? My car's being towed because I don't have any car insurance. And what does his friend tell him? Why don't you have any insurance? Ooh, it gets me every single time. Listen, friend, I just need you to come and pick me up right now. Like, that's beside the point. Let's talk about first things first. I'm sitting up here stranded in the middle of nowhere. All I need is a ride. I need you to tell me yes or no. You don't need any of that. How about you come and get me? And when you get here, I'll fill you in on all the details. But right now, first things first, I need a ride. Sorry, it triggers me every single time. Because that's my friends. That's what they do. They ask too many questions. Friends in the movies would never. Friends in the movies wouldn't just show up. They would show up with donuts. Because they know that that's the only thing that'll make you feel good when you're having a bad day. And that is why I've come to the conclusion. Friends in the movies will make you feel like you don't have no friends. And if you do have friends, they gonna make you feel like your friends ain't worth a darn. This pandemic, y'all, I tell you, this pandemic has brought a lot of things to light. A lot of different things unrelated to that. It has brought a lot of different skill sets to light. Skills that I didn't even know that I had. This pandemic, I have done some strange things for some change. I've been a private investigator. I have been an advertisement watcher. Yes, you can make money watching advertisements. You're not going to get rich, but you're going to eat that day. I've been a manny. I've even been a nanny. My latest endeavor, y'all, I'm a psychic medium now. Yeah, I talk to ghosts now. Yeah, I haven't always had this gift. It's new. But I decided to jump in and go full commercial with my gift because I really didn't like the way that the psychic industry was going. Because y'all know, every psychic medium out there. They come bringing the same tired message each and every time. And what is that? That Gigi is smiling down on you. Y'all notice Gigi's never smiling up on nobody. Catch that. Gigi is smiling down on you and she wants you to know. Gigi wants me to tell you that she loves you. And each and every time, what happens? The other person. I just really needed to hear that today of all days. Like this morning I was having my coffee and I opened up the window and this like breeze came through. And I never opened up the window. And when that breeze came through, I really felt like it was the presence of Gigi. And it's like to hear you say this to me right now, today. I kind of feel like it's like a confirmation. Every single time. And this, my people, is why I'm now a psychic medium. Oh yeah, I come, I bring you all the messages that you want and that you need to hear. So I had to call a family meeting, y'all. I said, listen, if you go before me, do not come back and haunt me just to tell me that you love me. How about this? How about I will assume that you're in heaven? And I will assume that because you're in heaven, you don't have time to sit around and be petty about that time that I broke your fine china. I'm just going to assume that you love me. You don't have to come back and tell me. This is not a message that I welcome, okay? Now, there is messages that I do welcome. You know, if you got to come back and tell me, you know, but first, before you come back with that message, I need you to first prove to me that you are who you say you are. You know, like tell me where our spot is first. Then once you've cleared that, now you can bring the message. And the message better sound something like this. Kelly, go back to the old house in the backyard, around the corner from the gazebo, four trees down to the left. I buried a chest under that tree and there's $50,000 in it. This now is the type of message that I would like to receive from beyond the grave. And you notice the psychic mediums never have these kind of messages. But yeah, this is the kind of message that I welcome. Any other message, you can keep it. For anybody out there listening right now, I want you to go and tell your loved ones right now, while you are here in this 3D physical realm, tell them that you love them now so that you don't have to come back and haunt them to tell them that same tired message. Thank you all for sticking around and listening to me. I love you for it. And thank you, Dr. Mary, again for having me on your show. You're the only friend that I'm keeping. Because you know where our spot is. And that's brunch at your house on Sundays, of course.
Thank you, Kelly, for that wonderful assessment of friends and ghosts. And when I get that call from you, the call, I'll start brewing coffee and cooking up a storm. In the meantime, I am looking for your name on the marquee. Keep us posted. And thank you for that performance. The next piece will be a reading from a local artist's work. Crystal Ray is an actor and playwright who calls Chicago home, but fortunately for us, lives here in Houston. We are so lucky to have her. She performs frequently here, and you might have seen her at Houston's Ensemble Theater, Main Street Theater, Queensberry, Tuts, and more. Currently, she is starring in the production The Lawsons, a civil rights love story at the Ensemble Theater. She is also certified as a teacher. Her performances, writing, and theatrical presence are awe-inspiring. To introduce her, I want to play a recording that she made for my December 17th, 2020 show. I especially want to play this one because part of Black History Month to me is the inspiration for a community that has been oppressed, but whose creative energies have strived to survive through that suppression, to keep growing stronger and stronger. The piece is called My Favorite Things. Here is Crystal Ray.
My favorite things, other than Luther Vandross singing, these are a few of my favorite things. Matches, light bulbs. I mean, we draw them and they appear in these funny cartoons illustrating an idea or revelation of some sort, but light bulbs are kind of clean in a way, and somewhat effortless for the consumer. I don't want to light light bulbs. I want to start fires. The kind of fires that warm food and homes and are surrounded by ancient stories. I want to write and direct light-filled stories capable of chasing shadows off the trail and lend hope to the weary and accompany the prayers for a better tomorrow. The journey as an artist is, for me, learning how to build the perfect match, the perfect story. And this journey of perfection is pretty much at odds with the idea itself. Can you be both on a journey and already have it perfect? But that's how matches are lit, with scrapes and bruises and purposeful conflict. The kind of conflict that leaves the best idea standing when the dust settles. My dream is to write stories that will spark when flickered against the bottom of an old gunslinger's boot in a dusty saloon. The ideas I love most are the ones that require effort and friction, and when engaged, produce heat and light and every kind of change available. Chemical change, social, emotional change, spiritual. I want to build ideas and write stories that create concepts that ignite change. But for who? Right? So the word niche is popular with upstarts and entrepreneurs. And I am that. I'm an upstart. I have a day job of teaching theater, and I love that. And I work professionally in Houston as an actress. I'm a writer and a director. The world of performing arts is my home, but I'm finally at a place in my own story where I feel brave enough to try to construct from this crayon scribbled blueprint the stories I've created, the ones I've drawn up. There are two projects that I'm tackling right now. One is an urban retelling of the Gospels, and the second is a science-focused puppet show geared toward fourth graders, but not just any fourth graders. There's a small group of kids that I had a pleasure of teaching when I was in elementary school that did not connect with Bill Nye the Science Guy. Do you remember Bill Nye? He hasn't passed away or anything, at least not at the time of me talking about it. He's a good-looking, well-spoken white guy in a lab coat doing cool scientific activities. I love Domestic Kid and I love the show. But the kids I was teaching, they would have had a better chance of seeing a pregnant elephant give birth on a sidewalk than to see a guy like Bill Nye in their neighborhood. And should there be a black kid on a Bill Nye episode, and that happens sometimes, that kid didn't sound like my students. That kid sounded like Bill Nye, who sounds like me. So both Bill Nye and I are alien to the kids I am teaching. Almost. I mean, I kind of got by. I look like them, but I didn't sound right. They expressed it like this: Miss Ray, why you talk like that? You black. And I can't blame them. I kind of fooled them. I look like them, but I don't sound like them. And I'm teaching them things they haven't heard before. It's so many disjointed things. They need their own Bill Nye. Don't they deserve that? So it's a science show for teachers who serve those kids, our kids. A modern day George Washington Carver, is that a good way to say it? I don't know. I think you get it. And I hope I can write it. I am hoping I can create something they connect with. It's called The Foundlings, and the writing is embryonic at best, and it could all fail terribly. Skip sparkle, right to fizz, never catch fire. And therein lies the rub. Real art is risky, especially when you know who you want to serve and you hope what you're giving them makes sense to them, ignites them. And I could reassure myself that Bill Nye really is enough. I mean, I loved Bill Nye. Or I could be honest with myself and say, waiting on someone else to do it is foolish. The Ensemble Theater has been kind enough to lend a look to all of these ideas and their brilliance and help me figure out how we could potentially integrate arts with core curriculum. And that is wonderful. And I am grateful. But let me tell you, that puppet, the first puppet built for the show, my little show that's being birthed in my brain, that is the scariest puppet I've ever seen in my life. Scarier than Chucky and any horror film, because I have to give her voice. I have to make her work. And I'm not sure that I can. But for those kids that I see in my mind, they deserve that I try. So, for all the work and the possible failure ahead, my hope is that it leads to a world that is really brighter and warmer for everyone. Got a light?
I find this piece and Crystal Ray's reading of it galvanizing. We will have more from Crystal Ray in the second half of the show, during which we will listen to excerpts from plays by her and other African-American writers. To our listeners, I ask again, are you entertained, awed, moved, inspired to keep us on the air? Then please pull up kpft.org on whatever Ethernet or Wi-Fi connection that you have at hand and select donate. Please select our show, So What's Your Story, as the reason you are donating, and help keep us on the air. Give what you can. Every little bit helps. And it helps us for the station to know just how many people listen to So What's Your Story. We are a community-based storytelling radio show broadcast on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston Community Radio. In fact, the first community-based storytelling radio show. We are also broadcast at 91.9 in Huntsville, 89.5 in Galveston, and anywhere on the internet as kpft.org. Our show, So What's Your Story, is broadcast every Thursday at 5 p.m. Central Time. But as you will hear, you can listen to the show also after it has aired. Yes, our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild at houstonstorytellers.org. And that's Houston Storytellers, plural, with no periods, dots, separations. One word. Where you can replay any of our previous shows from So What's Your Story by selecting the radio show tab. Want to become a storyteller? Join the Houston Storytellers Guild and attend their monthly story swap on the fourth Tuesday of the month. Check out their calendar tab and grab the Zoom information for the next virtual swap, which I can tell you now will be February 22nd. And find other exciting events on the calendar, such as the 2022 Texas Storytelling Festival, March 10th to 13th in Denton, Texas. Another way to get into storytelling is by joining the Texas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network. You can find the Texas Storytelling Association at TejasStorytelling.com. And that's Texas, the original name of Texas, T-E-J-A-S, and continue storytelling with no periods.com. Our friends at The Moth are back at Warehouse Live in person the second Tuesday of the month. Looks like that's going to be March 8th next time around. Check out their Facebook page, The Moth in Houston, for updates on the next Storytelling Slam. Speaking of Facebook, you can find us at So What's Your Story on Facebook. Please visit us, oh yes, and please like us. You can suggest storytellers or themes on Facebook by emailing us at swys@kpft.org. As I mentioned earlier, Crystal Ray is performing in The Lawsons, a civil rights love story produced by the Ensemble Theater here in Houston. I bought my tickets online at ensemblehouston.com, and I urge you to do also. Reverend William Lawson and his wife, Audrey Lawson, were both very active in the civil rights movement here in Houston. They exchanged letters that have preserved their stories of sit-ins, arrests, starting the Wheeler Avenue Baptist Church, and of their courtship and love throughout it all. Crystal Ray plays Mrs. Lawson. Get ready for a stellar performance. She was named Best Actress by the Houston Press in 2020 for her performance in White Guy on the Bus. In addition to being an actress, she is also a writer. We listened to her reading of My Favorite Things. Now we have an excerpt from her one-man play, Tide, read by Jason Carmichael. Tide is a play set in 1963 after the terrible death of four young Black girls in the horrific 16th Street Baptist Church bombing in Birmingham, Alabama. In the play Tide, Daniel, a devoted husband and father, has lost his youngest daughter in this tragedy. Tide received the Black Seed Grant Award and will be produced here in Houston in July, with plans to take it to New York City in 2023. And now, let me bring you Jason Carmichael as Daniel.
We don't go to that church no more. They built it back up, but we ain't go back. My oldest daughter, only older by a few months, but she got all the markings of being born first. She never want us helping, always looking down the road to what's next. Only time she ain't that way is on Sunday. On Sunday, she holds my hand. I thought she was doing it for me, 'cause I don't want to be in nobody's pew. Don't want to be singing, don't want to be preached at. And I tell my wife and baby girl to go to the bathroom before we leave, 'cause ain't nobody going to the bathroom there. Soon as you can't hold it, we gone. We coming home. And they don't fight me on it. They scared of the bathroom too. Which means we leave church most times during the altar call, which be another 2 hours long anyway. The only reason I'm going is because last time I didn't, I lost the ocean. What a man do if he lose the ocean and dry land? So, I go. But I don't want to. And I thought that's why my oldest had my hand. And we was maybe 3 or 4 months into going to this new church, and we was leaving early like we do. And just as we crossed the threshold onto the sidewalk, I see her breathe out. Which made me think back through the whole service. She had my hand the whole 2 hours. And as the time went on, she squeezed my hand tighter and tighter till she was near crushing me. I know, because every Sunday my hand is throbbing for at least an hour after service. She crushing me because she's holding her breath like she's underwater. And first thing I can't figure out is how in the world is she not breathing for 2 hours? Ain't no Negro sermon shorter than 2 hours. And how come I ain't notice she don't breathe no more? Ain't been breathing for months. So Sunday come again, and this time I'm ready. Before we leave, I take my oldest and set her on the table. So she and I are about right here. And I did for my 11-year-old the same thing I used to do for them kids paying me to interpretate their dreams. I locked her and looked her in the eye. And I lied. God told me in a dream, he say, tell my daughter that I have sent 3 angels to her home. And I say, thank you, Lord. Is that one angel for me, one for my wife, and one for my baby girl? And God said, no. They are all for your daughter. And God told me to tell you, when you're running out of air, shout hallelujah, and the air will come rushing in. We walk into that little church and sat where we sit, and my oldest daughter gripped my hand and starting to get tight. And I'm watching her, and she ain't breathing. And so I pointed to the corner where there ain't nobody standing. And I say, "There one is, right there. You see him? Big joker, taller than me." He frowning, he ready. The second you give him the signal, he ready. And she look over, and she squint, and she is wringing my hand to death. And it's quiet because they're praying over communion. And she roars from the bottom of her little soul, "Hallelujah!" And the room is stunned because Negroes got a time and place for hollering. They like to wait for the organ to be going and the choir to be singing, or the preacher to be, "Ha!" A couple of folks ran out the building thinking they was getting bombed. And my baby girl is roaring. And ushers are making a beeline over to her because ushers got control issues. But I'm not going to let her fight for air all by herself. So I stand up, and she jump up on the pew. So she almost tall as me. And we hallelujah until my wife went into a fit of a dance. Whirled like a chocolate-covered helicopter. Arms for blades. Dress bouncing, head flinging, people diving out of the way. And heaven shoved itself into that little tiny church and sent the whole congregation into a beautiful hysteria. And in the middle of all them tambourines and clapping and ecstasy, my baby girl grabs my face and she say, "Look, Daddy, I'm breathing. Hallelujah."
That was a very moving reading by a very loving father who unfortunately has to grieve the early murder of his young daughter. As you know, it took nearly 40 years for the murderers to be convicted. While we are relieved at the recent conviction of Ahmaud Arbery's murderers in Georgia, and before that, for George Floyd in Minnesota, we have to keep asking ourselves, why haven't these hate killings stopped? If you are ever in Birmingham, please visit the 16th Street Baptist Church with its memorial to these lovely little girls, along with the Kelly Ingram Park across the street, which was a central staging ground for many of the demonstrations there during the civil rights movement of the 1960s. I want to read a comment posted by Rick Rapp on Goodreads about the play before we go to our next story. Quote, "This is a beautiful and poetic and shattering tale of loss and redemption. The author is a former student, and I can't contain my pride in her. When a tragedy occurs, we think of the ones immediately affected, but we often don't give enough time and help to the survivors. Now, I want to highlight another African-American playwright with a reading from one of his plays. I first met Willie Thomas Harris and his wife Sharon in Manhattan in the 1980s. Tommy was born in Birmingham, Alabama, and moved north after serving with the U.S. Army in World War II. He was a writer, an artist, a brilliant raconteur, and a supreme host. He was also a fabulous chef. And I loved nothing more than dinner parties at his house near Columbia University, where he had studied creative writing after serving in the Army during World War II. Tommy could bring alive stories of listening to the invasion of Normandy from his army barracks in southern England, of how he met Sharon and their life together in Paris in the 1960s. I had the honor of attending a performance of his play, A Single Blade of Grass, at the 18th Street Playhouse in New York. Tommy was awarded the Theater of Renewal, or TOR, T-O-R, award for the play in 1986. It centers on a character named Skeeter, who has returned from the South to live in Harlem, and his partner, Viola. Skeeter is described by the author as Black, of Southern origin, unschooled, and incapable of coping within a large urban Northern environment. He's 20 years old and speaks with a stammer. He is described by reviewer Norman Charles in the Daily Challenge of September 22, 1986, as, quote, the stinging metaphor of that modern-day Black odyssey of the journey north in perennial search for social and economic justice, indeed fulfillment, end quote. And later, as someone who, quote, fantasizes all over the place, end quote. Viola is also divided between their fantasy world and the realities of staying above water in Harlem in the 1960s. Here is an excerpt from the play with Tanner Ellis reading the part of Skeeter and Crystal Ray reading the part of Viola. Sadly, we lost Tommy, but Sharon has graciously agreed to join us in a conversation after the reading. And let me point out that Tanner Ellis and Crystal Ray had received a copy of the script on the same day that we recorded this reading. And now, let's listen.
What's the matter with you, Skeeter? You act like I've been out with another dude, right? Get that idea out of your head, out of your mind.
Gee, Viola, I know you ain't been fooling around. I know it down deep.
Skeeter, you're special. You care, you really do.
I like when you talk to me this way.
Except for my little brother, Ronnie, nobody except you really gave a damn. They didn't care whether I was a good or a bad woman.
For sure. Viola, your mama and dad must have cared a lot.
Well, sure they did, but they didn't pay too much attention. Skeeter, you know, when I made a little money and helped out at home, my parents was glad, but Ronnie would look at me suspicious, like he was questioning me and asking me if I did something wrong.
And what did you tell him?
The truth. I told him I worked in the Bronx. That's funny.
What?
When I brought him a present, he always wanted to know, where'd you get the money? Where'd you get the money? Until he finally believed me. I thought it. Believed me. I hope so. Skeeter, it's hard, you know, a lot of times to be the way people want you to be. I mean, I'm your woman. I belong to you until the day I die.
Whew, ain't it hot in here? Last summer. Remember, me and you went out to Rockaway Beach. Didn't I swim far in that water?
I was so scared when I looked out and saw that you was just a dark blur bouncing on the waves.
Shucks. I could have kept on going. But I didn't see nothing out there. Everything was gray. Even the clouds, like the water was gray.
I was sure glad to see you walking across that beach on dry land.
That night we danced in a bar and I dressed up in those brand new jeans you gave me for my birthday.
You just turned 21. And I was so proud of you. Yeah. I wanted to buy you a present this morning when I got off the subway at Times Square. I saw a pair of boots in a store and I said, right then, I'm going to get Skeeter some boots like them. What? Stop looking at me like that. But I don't like it.
You say you jumped off the subway at Times Square.
Mm-hmm.
You ain't waiting no table last night. You ain't even been to Brooklyn. Viola.
You trying to accuse me of something? Right? What is it? I ain't gonna let you skitter play around with my head. Now, I've told you I worked last night. What's the matter?
You worked in Brooklyn, you say. Well, that's a long way from Times Square. You hurting something deep in me.
If you're wondering about me going to Times Square, I got off the subway there to look for that television. Skeeter, don't you trust me? Don't you?
My mama asked me not to live with you.
Well, that's why I can't stand your mama. You're always trying to run your life. One thing I got to say about my parents, when I got grown, they didn't bug me. Never. Of course, they couldn't do much for me anyhow. And they just drifted off and let me make it on my own. They took my little brother Ronnie with him. At first, I missed him so much. I still do. But they took him back down south, and I sure did hate that. I mean, Ronnie was like, you know what I mean, Skeeter? He was like, sun shining through our front window all at once when the clouds been promising rain all day long. I loved him. I loved Ronnie so much. He was only 14.
Yeah. It sure is hard to watch somebody you love go off when you know it's going to be a long time before you see him again.
But I never did see Ronnie again. He ran away. Ronnie did.
How come, Viola? How come a boy like that had to run off and leave his mama?
He was hitchhiking back to New York to see me. And he got run over on the highway.
Something always happens when you run off from your mama. Well, I know how you felt. Man, it's gotta hurt.
He's just about your age when he had that accident. About 20 years old. He sure did need me, and I wasn't there to help him. After that, I never got attached to anybody except you. I'm narcotics. But family, close friends, loved ones are bound to break your heart because they gotta go and do their own thing. Even your mama and papa, little brother.
I'm going against my mama. Ooh, something bad is gonna happen.
You know, what in the hell are you talking about?
My mama asked me not to live with a woman older than me.
What is she talking about? Look, I'm not an old woman. I'm only 30.
I explained to her that age don't mean nothing. Nothing to me. Oh, but she told me a woman that take care of a man can't be no good.
I don't know if your mama was right or wrong, but I have to do the best I can for both of us. Skeeter, but God take care of some people.
He take care of us all.
Well, I think he lets some of us live like sparrows.
Oh, don't you go talking against God.
I ain't saying nothing against God.
Oh, you sure did sound like it.
Skeeter, listen to me. Because some of us ain't nothing but sparrow people. And we have to dig for our worms wherever we can.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. Nothing.
But now you got me all screwed up.
How?
You don't mind being a sparrow? Hopping along, picking at anything?
Oh, Viola, when I went to church back in Savannah, the members would sing about God. Look, I bet you don't even know this song. Sometimes I feel so happy. Sometimes I feel so free. Cause his eye is on the sparrow and I know he watches me.
Oh, Skeeter. We'd be better off if you could just see it my way. I mean, don't you know that? Well, we wouldn't have too much.
We ain't never gonna have too much.
But we'd have a hell of a lot more than we have right now.
Viola, it ain't right to want more than you need. My mama told me that.
That was because you didn't have much to give you. Maybe.
Don't you say that about mama.
I don't want to hurt you. My parents didn't have much to give me either. I guess that's why they left me with an aunt and went back on to Florida.
I'm going to split out of here from here too.
Skeeter, we all get that dream at times, but we ain't going nowhere. I mean, we ain't. We hemmed in New York's like that.
Now I'm going to go back to Savannah, Georgia.
What for, Skeeter? What do you want to go back down there for?
Because I like the trees on the outskirts of town. Viola, since I've been up here 3 years, my mama and me, I ain't looked at wild things growing, and I ain't touched a single blade of grass. I ain't even smelt not one lonely flower.
And gosh darn ski. You make me want to go back to Florida, to Jacksonville, and try to find my mom and dad. I ain't seen them in 8 years, and I ain't heard from them before, but I don't reckon I'm going to ever get to go back down there. Nah, I'm going to keep my butt right here in Harlem, where I belong. But I'm so glad you like trees and flowers and things like that. You skitter, I'm going to decorate this house with a whole lot of carnations.
Don't bring me no flowers that been killed. Don't do that, because I'll throw them right back at you. Viola, I like flowers growing wild, and I like the earth they grow in. I don't like to watch no flowers dying in my room. You know what else I like? I like the sunshine, the raining, and the wind blowing hard on my face. I even like the hurricanes.
So Tanner and Crystal, oh gosh, thank you so much for that extemporaneous reading. I mean, if I can tell our audience, these guys just saw the script today. Tanner, I know you perform with the Ensemble Theater, and what are you doing these days that we could be interested in seeing you on stage?
Okay. Hello, my name is Tanner Ellis, and I've been affiliated with Ensemble Theater since 7 years old. I've done quite a few main stage plays with them, and I grew up in their Young Performers program. And when I got old enough, I started interning for their Young Performers program. And recently, I've been doing more TV and commercial work. So I recently did a Best Buy commercial and a commercial for Driveway that's been playing on Houston local news stations. So make sure that you all tune in.
Commercials? Yes.
Hey, you know what? The commercials are the best part of TV sometimes. It's the only reason I watch the Super Bowl.
For some reason, that's been what I've been pulled into lately, just commercial work. So that's what I've been up to.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Y'all really had a nice, as I say, very spontaneous but great repartee in reading this dialogue. And how about you, Crystal?
I'm a part of the Lawsons, which goes up February 10th through the 13th at the Ensemble. So right. February 10th through March 13th. And so super grateful to be a part of that. Telling the story of local heroes. The Lawsons are like crazy cool civil rights activist couple that founded Wheeler Avenue Baptist. So it's a whole show centered around the 600 letters that they wrote each other during their courtship come through. We think we're doing something with text messaging, but listen, licking postage stamps, come on, this is a different kind of love. And so it is so sweet and it is so powerful because you're watching the civil rights movement and what that means, and love triumph in ways that you wouldn't guess. And so it's really beautiful. So very honored to be a part of that in a very real way. For my own work, I'm working on a kids show with puppets. And so I'm training local actors in puppetry because I need people to know how to work the puppets. But we're going to be telling stories and teaching reading concepts. And it's centered around people of color. It's like Sesame Street for the fourth graders who are too cool for Sesame Street, told by their Black grandmother. Like, it's like it's the weirdest version of Sesame Street ever. But the hope is that they feel welcomed and not talked down to, but then also get the support that they need.
Yeah.
So I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm having a really fun time. And I think that's why I'm an artist, is that we can say, oh, that didn't work, but look what I learned. Or it did work, and look at how it made the world better. And so those are the kinds of risks I like taking. And so that's my life.
That's a very important thing. You know, it's so we're now coming into the season of the Academy Awards, and it's so interesting, sadly interesting, to look at how in the 1960s, you know, Mammy, the actress who played Mammy, received an Academy Award, but basically the roles were subservient roles without a sense of what that person's life was.
Sure.
And you know, it was all about how they served their previous owners. And so I really admire the ensemble theater as a very important institution in Houston that has highlighted African American artists. I could say a lot of things. Certainly, I think what Texas is doing with their books is just criminal. I really commend you all for, you know, continuing what you're doing and making the story of what it was like growing up as someone who didn't have the so-called privileges of a citizen transparent and always available to them. And I think it's very important for all of our children to grow up and know that.
Yeah.
So thank you. Thank you for doing it.
Thank you. And then thank you for sharing your platform with us. We certainly appreciate it and the opportunity to read. And even this piece that we had a chance to work through, I appreciate even what you shared with me about that. Thank you.
Yes. So Sharon, I think we can hear you now. Did you want to tell us about the inspiration for Skeeter, which I found fascinating? So if I can say a little bit about Tommy as I knew him. I met Tommy and Sharon when I was living in Manhattan. Tommy's originally from Birmingham. Sharon, tell us a little bit more. You met Tommy when he was producing a play in Wisconsin.
Yes, that's where we met, in Madison. I was in university studying pharmacy, and a friend introduced us, a friend from northern Wisconsin, Daniel Leno, who has a print dealer now living in Santa Rosa, California. And he was a good friend, and he was raving about Tommy Harris all the time. You know, he said, and he was his roommate. And he was telling me he knew this brilliant Black playwright. And my girlfriends and I had an apartment off campus, and we told him, well, bring your friends around, you know, we'd like to meet them. And he brought Tommy around, and Tommy saw me, and he was smitten, and the next day he called me for a date, and that was it. We met in May, and we got married in December on Christmas break.
I remember him.
And he took me on an adventure of a lifetime. I told him I wanted to do two things in my life. That's aside from graduating with my degree. I wanted to go to New York, and I wanted to go to Paris. And he kept his promise. He took me to New York, and he took me to Paris. And then he wrote his... We established ourselves in Paris, and his plays... And that's when he decided to put this character, Skeeter, in a play. And shall I go on about how he...
Oh, please, tell us
about that.
Tell us about Skeeter.
When he was in New York, this was years before he met me, and he was studying in New York at Columbia, and he got on the GI Bill, by the way. He was a World War II veteran, and he had the GI Bill. So anyway, one day he was on the subway going to Harlem, and he saw this young man, gangly, tall dude sitting in his on the subway car. And he was reading a comic book, and he was energetically chewing gum. It was bubble gum, and he was into his comic book and chuckling at because he was reading and blowing these big bubbles. And he was just having enjoying himself, you know, totally enjoying himself, totally into his moment. And this image of Tom, it never left Tom. For some reason, this man just stuck in his mind, and he wondered who he was, where did he come from, what was his story. And, you know, he just, it was a character he just couldn't leave him. So when he was writing his plays in Paris, he started a play, and he decided to put Skeeter into a play. And the play wasn't working out, but Skeeter like kind of jumped off the pages of the play. So he chucked away that play, and he just built a play around Skeeter, and that's how he came about with Not a Single Blade of Grass. The character just built itself, and he became Skeeter.
And I remember the production in New York, the Off Broadway. I mean, it was just so wonderful to see Tommy in his play, and Tommy talking about Skeeter, and just watch Skeeter perform. Yeah.
Well, he's just an enjoyable personality, and with all his foibles, but he's lovable.
Yes,
and the audience just picked up on him. And there's something about Skeeter.
There is definitely something about Skeeter. I would love to see the theater, this play produced by a theater here in Houston. Who knows?
Yeah, he just becomes so alive on the stage.
Yes, I have. In fact, my recollection of him talking about A Single Blade of Grass, because Skeeter was so strong in it that I remembered that as a monologue. And then when I went back and looked at it and said, oh, I need two readers. It wasn't a monologue. Viola was there.
No,
also.
No, Viola's very important in that play.
Yes, yes.
Yes, yes.
And I think we could hear that in, you know, between the two of them. It was Skeeter and Viola almost kind of opposing forces in terms of what they thought about their lives. But I want to thank everybody. Sharon, I want to thank you for allowing us to have the reading. I want to thank Tanner and Crystal for taking time out of their busy day. And like I say, this was pretty much, they saw the script today and read it. So you see what fine actors they are in being able to bring the emotion into this. So thank you all.
Thanks very much to Crystal Ray, to Rachel Hemphill Dickinson, who introduced me to Tanner Ellis. And let me remind you, Rachel Hemphill Dickinson is the director at the Ensemble Theater. To Tanner Ellis himself, to Jason Carmichael, to Sharon Harris, and to Kelly Kells for making this hour possible. And thanks to all of you who've gone to KPFT and chosen So What's Your Story as your inspiration for a donation. As we settle into the present, I hope you have learned that above all, we are all human beings trying to make our way in this crazy world. Talent is colorblind, though our stories may differ. So let us take this month to celebrate our African-American talented community. And as you celebrate Black History Month in the next few weeks, do something different. Visit the Buffalo Soldiers Museum. Go see the Lawsons at the Ensemble Theater. Or follow hashtag Black History Month and learn about someone new. Most of all, remember, there is no room for any kind of race-based hatred in our lives. Larry Thompson will be at the helm next week with more tellers and new journeys. But don't leave. Stay tuned in KPFT, because Charles Hightower's R&B Gold is up next with a soothing mix of music as a balm for your soul. And maybe you need that right now. Make Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1, a part of every day. And while you're driving home or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 5 p.m. for So What's Your Story? It's a great way to make the commute go by. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Mary Edgerton, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that even if a story doesn't end the way you want,
It's about the journey, not the destination. And look ahead. It's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace. His eye is on the sparrow. Oh, yes, I know. He watches.
Oh. You're listening to...